Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line our good friend Bill Sardi, and we're going to be talking about, well, what are we going to be talking about today, Bill?
We're going to talk about how modern medicine can't take its own medicine.
All right, fine. Well, of course, the trouble is that there's so many articles that are written in the medical journals today that doctors read, and they're plant articles they've been putting in by the drug companies, and they're full of lies and half-truths, and the doctors many times do not understand that they're being convinced by the drug companies to use a product that just isn't safe, and many times discouraged from using products that are safe, are inexpensive, safe, and certainly have no complications. So you pick up the story there.
Well, certainly, you know, and I know, Dr. Stan, that we can go to the government website, PubMed. Now, this means publication medicine. So all of the referenced articles that are in peer-reviewed journals, we hope all of them, are certainly referenced there. So it's the National Library of Medicine. And here it is online so we can find it. Wait a minute. Can we find the special articles that Linus Pauling produced on vitamin C at the Journal of Orthomolecular Medicine? Why, they don't reference it on PubMed.gov. You see, they selectively pick the journals that they want. And now it's come out that they selectively pick the articles. And some things that you'll find that are articles on natural medicine in the table of contents of journals isn't referenced on PubMed, even though it's on certainly on the journal table of contents. So you have to go find the table of contents. Well, how would you know it's there? The big reference table of contents is PubMed.gov. So they're selectively keeping things from our eyes and from the doctor's eyes when they do research.
And, of course, this became very, very obvious to me when I was studying the fluoride situation, and PubMed refuses to mention Fluoride Magazine, which actually has been published for many years, full of peer-reviewed articles by scientists and chemists throughout the world, pointing out the danger of water fluoridation, pointing out the danger of using fluoride on so many things and in so many products. And PubMed, the government website, refuses to reference anything in Fluoride Magazine. Now, why is that? Why? Because they're controlling effectively what the doctors read and what they see and ultimately what they believe. And then what they're going to tell their patients, their unsuspecting patients who have no idea that the doctors are being misled in an intentional effort to mislead the patients.
Well, we have a new search engine as of today. It's just being started. That'll be PubMed NCI, meaning no conflicts of interest.
All right.
I'm laughing. We'll tell your audience more in just a moment.
All right, fine. Well, of course, our guest today is Bill Sardi, and it's amazing. Of course, we love to have Bill as a guest on our program, but if you listen to radio programs all across America, as my wife often does when she's out in the car, and she will turn on another radio station, and she'll hear Bill Sardi there, and Bill is certainly heard on stations all across America talking about specific products, certainly one of the best-known voices, talking about health matters here in this country, and we're certainly pleased to have him here as a regular guest here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming into you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Bill Sardi, who's a health journalist and, of course, does help Radio Liberty as we reach out across America 5 hours every day trying to get people educated as to what's really going on. And he was simply pointing out that if you really want to look up something on medicine, ordinarily you would go to the government website, PubMed, which, of course, is published with government sponsorship. And here's where doctors go to get the truth about various medicines and what they should know. The only thing is they're very, very selective in what they put up there. And if they don't want the doctor to know something, those articles are not listed. So they don't list every article. They list very selectively the articles that they want the doctors to read. I was simply pointing out that they have actively suppressed every article in the magazine Fluoride. Why? Because they don't want the American people to know that they are systematically and intentionally poisoning our children with fluoride and fluoridated drinking water. So pick up the story there, Bill.
Well, certainly now we're seeing an effort by some, and that is to put out some sort of a web site presence so you can search for these obscure articles that they have hidden from both doctors and the American public. And some people are pretty savvy and even know how to search this on their own that are lay people. So the problem is some of these great articles. Now, you know, when people get caught in the middle, in the fray, as we say, and so they hear one side on anything from chlorine in the water, fluoride in the water, whatever all these things are. And because there's two sides to the issue, they're confused. They're paralyzed. They don't know who to believe. But when they see that there is a covert effort to keep part of the argument away from your view, now, that says something. And when we see it with fluoride, when we see it with some of these other issues, particularly vitamin C stands out, but there are many others. And, of course, modern medicine keeps arguing for something as a level of evidence. And, of course, what is that something? It's called the double-blind, longitudinal, randomized, clinical, interventional trial. What does all that mean? And that means they don't want to just see what we call epidemiological evidence. Let's study how many people in a city get sick and see how much water they drink, and maybe it's due to the water. That's just what occurs naturally. They want to see you use something interventionally, like give them a pill or something, and then give them a placebo, another group.
Hold that thought for just... Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bill Sardi was just talking about how they actually look at medical trials, and certainly they have these double-blind studies where one group is given a pill and the other group is given a placebo, and then they follow them along to find out if the pill works better than the placebo. That is how you're supposed to do the studies if you want an honest analysis. The question is it will be an honest analysis when there are literally hundreds of millions or billions of dollars at stake? The statin drugs make $25 billion a year. Is it any wonder, of course, they don't tell the doctors that they produce cancer, that they can produce mental derangement, they can produce all sorts of complications? And, of course, in most instances, with normal people who've never had a heart attack, they don't do a bit of good from their own studies showing that it decreases the incidence of cardiac morbidity or mortality. So you pick up the story there, Bill, because when money's at stake, sometimes scientific integrity goes out the window.
So one group gets an active ingredient, and the other group gets a placebo. That is just a sugar tablet or something. Now, by the way, sugar tablets make the brain work better, so... But the assumption is there's some sort of a placebo effect, which has all been proven to be untrue. It's a falsehood pushed upon us by a man in the 1950s, found to be invalid a few years ago by German researchers. But we continue to use this idea that there is such a thing as a placebo effect. Now, it doesn't mean that there aren't conditioned responses. You get up next to a flower and you sneeze, and then you find out it was just a plastic flower. But as far as placebo effect goes, this was actually looked at by German researchers. It's always used the wrong way. In other words, if a vitamin or a mineral does something, well, that's the placebo effect. But if it's a drug, it's never a placebo effect. And so this is always twisted around. What the doctors want to see is a long-term, that's the word longitudinal, randomized, that means people get picked at random to get these pills or what have you, a clinical intervention, that is, they're given this and assigned in a trial that lasts and is controlled under certain circumstances so that everybody is about the same age or has the same disease or the same stage of the disease and so on. So the two groups are matched up and then this goes on. We had just such an event occur in 1996, published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Question would be, just what would you accept, if you were a scientist, as proof that there's a cure for cancer? Well, of course, Dr. Larry Clark at the University of Arizona, at the time he was at Cornell University, launched such a study, and it lasted for just a few years. 1983 to 1991, they took 200 micrograms of selenium, a little trace mineral, tried to find out if it prevented skin cancer. And I guess that's the sneaky way you're going to have to get funding, because it didn't work. The study failed miserably. But on the back side, they tabulated how many people got other cancers and came up with one of the most dramatic discoveries of the modern era of medicine. A trace mineral supplement of selenium completely abolished the other forms of cancer, almost all of them except skin cancer. These were major reductions. This was announced in 1996. And of course, it's kind of forgotten now, thrown under the bus, ignored and diminished by the medical community. Do you go to the doctor and just he tell you to take a selenium supplement if you're at risk for recurrence of breast or prostate cancer? Does he suggest that maybe a selenium supplement would be good for you? At the time of this discovery, the Center for Science and the Public Interest documented modern medicine's disbelief. Let me quote it for you. From what we could see, there wasn't anything wrong with the study, says Walter Willett, Harvard Medical School, but Willett said he was troubled by how quickly cancer rates drop when you give them to selenium takers. It's not impossible, but it's pretty unusual to see cancer rates go down right away, he said. Other researchers admit it's unlikely that anything other than selenium explains the differences in their risk. That means the study was valid. But it's almost too good to be true, said Dr. Willett. If the effect is this large, it would be more important than anything else we know about cancer prevention ever. Now, they're in disbelief. And what has happened since then is this immediately caused researchers to race and tell the public, you could die from taking selenium supplements. That's what they said. At levels of 1,000 micrograms a day, people start losing their hair, fingernails, have gastrointestinal problems. People who ignore these signs can get a lethal overdose. Everybody's scared about the results of this study because you could kill yourself with selenium, said one researcher. Can you imagine we have one of the greatest discoveries in cancer prevention ever, and this is the way they react? Ladies and gentlemen, none of what I just told you is true. There has never been a death from taking selenium supplements. They have given 3,200 micrograms. They only gave 200 in this study. Recently, to prostate cancer patients, they got 3,200 micrograms a day. That's only 3.2 milligrams with, as they said, no obvious selenium-related serious toxicities. That was the Journal of Trace Elements in Medicine and Biology just last year. Now, it is true that in China they have some selenium beds where the selenium in an inorganic form has gotten exposed and people got too much selenium and there was toxicity there. We're talking about selenium in foods where it's bound to proteins or in dietary supplements where it's bound to proteins. It's not just a raw elemental metal. And, of course, here it is, never been a case of death or toxicity from a dietary supplement, and yet this is how they handled this. It's totally amazing. Not one doctor will recommend what they beg and ask and demand for. The very study that showed there was a longitudinal, double-blind, placebo-controlled study that said that selenium supplements, 200 micrograms, the one that was used in the study was a special kind of selenium called Seleno XL, and that particular type you can find in the health food stores, and it dramatically reduces their risk. And of course, if you have an active form of cancer, they're thinking about using higher doses like the 3200 micrograms, and that's why they gave it in a safety study to men with prostate cancer. It's a dramatic discovery. Modern medicine isn't buying it, even though it meets all the scientific criteria that they demand. They will not swallow their own medicine. They will not follow. And in the meantime, we see Vioxx, Celebrex, and all the rest of these deadly drugs being used.
But of course, there's not a lot of profit to be made in selenium, is there?
There isn't much profit there, and of course, they're calling this the first real nutraceutical, meaning nutrition-ceutical, like a pharmaceutical. And, of course, it's so well documented. There's article after article after article. This is really very well studied.
And actually, as I remember, and of course, you correct me if I'm wrong, but actually, if you don't get enough selenium, don't you get myocarditis? Wasn't that found in certain
areas
of the world?
That's right. You get the heart failure. Right. You get the inflammation. We've talked about selenium on Radio Liberty before as preventing the mutations in the flu virus so that you won't get the form of the flu that then causes the pneumonia and you die. But now we're talking about it in relationship to cancer. And we're using this as a demonstration of how modern medicine selectively ignores the best science for their own convenience. And of course, we've been arguing for a long time. They do not have a effective treatment for prostate cancer. The PSA test, prostate-specific antigen test, just this week found to be invalid, found to be worthless. And, of course, many other reports showing that over the last 2 or 3 years. Men march right in, are being selectively screened, and then, of course, undergo biopsy, and then, of course, sometimes treatment. And all of it worthless because it never changes the day on which you die. All of this is just being done. It's true you do have cancer cells. It is true that there's a problem there, and that but it isn't true that you need any treatment, and it isn't true that any treatment will help you live any longer. Nor is it true that if they detect it any earlier, helps you live any longer. Now, this is the terrible fact, that we're doing worthless treatment and worthless screening. We don't have the tools, and we don't tell men about selenium. With no effective treatment, we don't tell them the one thing that is in the medical science. It's just a little trace mineral. Certainly couldn't be toxic in this small amount, and they gave it in larger amounts without any human toxicity.
And I think one of the most amazing things that, you know, scientific studies have shown for a long time that if you drink milk, you double your incidence of prostatic cancer. I think it's about 1 in 3 or 1 in every 4 men gets a prostatic cancer today, and they know there's a definite relationship to milk drinking, and that is never brought out. I mean, occasionally they'll mention it, and then they'll poo-poo it, and you'll never hear it again.
Well, we have some problems with milk because you think there's some in there that they haven't told us about. Talked about this also on Radio Liberty
right.
before. And there's probably some bacteria in there that's paratuberculosis, and that it's not being killed by the heat treatment, the pasteurization, and so that could lead to cancer and so on. So,
well, of course, I think this thing about selenium is so important, and of course the thing is that until some of the leaders of organized medicine become talking about it, and you know, then the other doctors begin using it, you're sort of bound as a practicing doctor to go by the standard of treatment. But if somebody's blocking the information from getting out, for whatever reason, stupidity or perhaps intentionally, and the doctor doesn't know, he's not going to tell the patients, and people are going to continue dying significantly from unnecessary cancers. Could that really happen in America? We'll be back in just a moment with Bill Sardi. Well, Bill, is this idea taking hold at all, or has this continued to be suppressed like so many of the effective things that would cut down on the incidence of cancer?
Well, we do have, I think for most men, and we're talking about prostate cancer here as an example, for women it would be the same for breast cancer or so many other forms of cancer. The patients are going to have to find out on their own. Now, the problem is the mindset of the patient is, let me check this with my doctor. Well, I heard about it from somebody else, or I read about it on the Internet. Let me check this with my doctor. You see, we're running into a stone wall, and looking for permission slips we're never going to get. And so when you read this data, and we share it to you so that you can kind of have it synthesized and summarized in a way where you can see this clearly, and you understand that this is the highest level of scientific proof that we can find, and yet it's being denied and overlooked by modern medicine. Your doctor will know little about it. Some of the prostate doctors do. And, of course, most can't even remember the study was published in 1996, almost 10 years ago. So this is the kind of thing that we get. And, of course, for people, it's a life and death situation. For many people, cancer prevention, let's just say they've undergone treatment, many cancers can come roaring back, particularly breast and prostate, and yet nothing is done. You're just left to sit there. And if the bullet comes your direction, it's tough luck.
Well, now, what about taking the selenium after you've already had cancer and you've had it removed? Can you cut down the recurrence level by taking selenium?
That's right, and that's what we think. We see it in the data, and, of course, it's very important. But for many people, I had finished talking with a young lady in Chicago a couple of months ago, and she explained to her doctor that, you know, she was just eating. Did she need to change her diet at all? And she explained that she eats donuts in the morning and various things. And the doctor said, no, it'll make no difference. So, you know, when this kind of ignorance goes on, of course, sugar in particular is troublesome, refined sugars to breast cancer, not to all other kinds of cancer. So we had to counsel this young woman to cut down on refined sugars. You still need some sugar in the diet, but we want to cut that down, be careful about it. And, of course, Dr. John Ely from the University of Washington has shown if you take the refined sugars out of the diet and with some conventional cancer treatment, you can get prolonged remissions. Now, they showed significant ones because the sugar leads to weight, and weight leads to fat cells, and fat cells leads to more estrogen, and estrogen leads to more dominance of the hormone that grows breast cancer. So, you know, it's important that people hear this straight out, that they see what they need to do. And so, in the case of selenium here, it's certainly one worth bringing back up for the public to hear about. It was a big headline in 1996. And the way modern medicine handles these is silence.
Now, what about PubMed? Has PubMed, of course, published those articles, do you recall?
PubMed did publish these articles. Of course, we're talking about some with Linus Pauling and vitamin C. A lot of the articles that are in the Journal of Orthomolecular Medicine, where this is something actually started by Linus Pauling and others, and then it was really the Journal of Orthomolecular Psychiatry when it was discovered that niacin might help people with schizophrenia and so on. That journal was started, and then later on expanded into all of medicine, not just mental disease. And, of course, these articles are historic, many of them.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment, Bill. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest this afternoon is Bill Sardi, and we're talking about the importance of selenium, not only to prevent cancer, but if you have cancer and you've had it operated on, taking this can certainly cut down on the incidence of recurrence. But the average patient doesn't know that, or if they do hear about it, they go to their doctor, and the doctor says, well, I've never read about that. Sounds pretty quacky to me. And the reason he's not reading about it is it's not discussed in his journals. It is not written about or talked about at the medical meetings he goes to, and nobody else is using it. And so he's going to totally ignore the more than adequate medical documentation, scientific documentation of the value of selenium in the not only the prevention but in the treatment of cancer and preventing its recurrence. So pick up the story there, Bill.
Well, certainly you've heard the story now that, of course, they're hiding medical reports from doctors. They're hiding it from you as the public. They're ignoring good science when you're actually not just having coughs, colds, and sneezes. You're having a life-threatening disease like cancer. And, of course, this gets to be rather troublesome. And it seems like every good natural medicine that starts to get some evidence behind it, they then run some sort of a pseudoscience study to bring it down. This happened a few years ago when magnesium, which is a natural muscle relaxant, was found to be good right after, of course, that you have a heart attack. And, of course, what they did is they took magnesium, infused it into fresh heart attack patients at such a fast rate that they killed a few of them, and then announced it doesn't work because it would have, of course, replaced many of the medicines they use in the emergency room immediately upon a heart attack. By the way, you may have a heart attack, and in the ambulance, they'll take a big needle and push it down and administer an anti-clotting enzyme called streptokinase. Now, that's about $800 a dose. Well, you can get a little enzyme at the health food store called nattokinase. Costs just a few dollars. Streptokinase costs $800, lasts for about 10 minutes. Nattokinase, made from soy, it's a little cheese, soy cheese enzyme, will last for 4 to 12 hours and keep blood clots from occurring in your blood system. Now, isn't that wonderful? This is kind of the thing that goes on, and it was recently here on my website at knowledgeofhealth.com that we took on another problem that came up here recently, because the headlines last week on WebMD and elsewhere said, don't take arginine if you have a heart attack. What in the world is arginine? And I don't know that anybody even knows to reach for it. Well, they wanted to make sure you never got the idea, because there's mounting evidence that a little amino acid called arginine, you can buy it in health food stores, has tremendous, tremendous benefits for, of course, people with cardiac and cardiovascular problems. So what they did is they took this little arginine and they gave it to people with heart attacks, and they had them on other medicines. And then what happened in the study is that 6 of the people on arginine died and none of the people in the other group. And, of course, they stopped the study and immediately told you, it's dangerous. That's really odd, because another study showed that if you gave it to people right after cardiac four-way bypass surgery, that their heart spontaneously went right back into natural rhythm and you didn't have to electric shock it or defibrillate it back into its normal rhythm again if you gave arginine. That was right after surgery. So this was kind of becoming something that the doctors were learning, and then they even showed that if you, of course, none of this was mentioned, the positive information, in the study that was just recently published in the Journal of American Medical Association. And, of course, one of the studies here showed that, of course, that if, and this is a Russian study, they actually published the electrocardiograms of giving arginine to people, and you could see as you gave the arginine, the electrocardiogram improved, and of course the heart rate improved, and all of this. And of course it was beginning to become clear that arginine was going to threaten many of the cardiac drugs that we now use, which are ineffective. So immediately they had to come up with this way of slamming and destroying arginine. And so the public, not even knowing this is a scientific battle going on behind the scenes, is confronted with a headline, don't take arginine if you have a heart attack. Well, folks, if you're having a heart attack, I don't even know if you've got the energy to reach for an aspirin tablet. I just thought it was really odd that they would be throwing that headline around to people when they don't even know what arginine is, because they want to make sure we never get the idea of taking it. It is a tremendous benefit. It's natural. And by the way, this would have been similar to saying don't eat nuts and chocolates after a heart attack, because they're loaded with arginine.
So we'll be back in just a moment with Bill Soddy. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Bill Sardi. We're talking about the recent articles that came out saying, oh, don't use arginine. My goodness, you know, some people have taken it and died. And it's almost as if somebody is putting out material and propaganda to discourage people from doing things that would be helpful for them. And we've seen so many efforts to tell people, oh, you don't want to take vitamin C, you don't want to take vitamin supplements, all you have is expensive urine, they don't do any good. And they know that they do good. They've known this for a long period of time. So why would anybody be discouraging the utilization of treatments which have proven down through the years to be very effective? And this is one reason why more and more people are going to the health food store and going to alternative practitioners, because they no longer trust their doctors. I was at a meeting the other day. I usually try to go every Friday to a medical meeting, and there was a speaker there who was talking about atopy, this means allergic reaction, and he was commenting that you better talk to your patients because probably 75% of them are taking alternative medicines, and they're using those before they come to see you, and you better know what medicines they're taking. And the purpose of the talk was to go into the background of the physiological effect of so many of the normal things that are out there that have been used for many hundreds and indeed many times thousands of years that work and work very efficiently. But of course, the average doctor has no idea about these because he's never trained in them, and he's discouraged at every turn from even trying to prescribe them to help his patients. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, certainly we do see the same kind of thing for the people listening, so they know, and they've probably heard it before here on the show. But just to emphasize, much of the data that we're trying to get our hands on, it's only in the government's hands on vaccines and autism. They will not let examiners review it. Now, why are they keeping it away? Why are they hiding it? This is the whole issue. We're calving things, kept from our eyes so that we can't see them. And, of course, we can't examine all the data. Sometimes they're giving us a summary or something, but we can't really find what it is. Recently, an article was published in a major cancer journal, and it was saying, by all means, don't use any antioxidants like vitamin E or vitamin C with chemotherapy or any kind of cancer treatment because it could be deleterious and dangerous. That was spread all over the country. It was on the evening television news. And then what we went back and looked at that article, it was the citations, the references were wrong. The articles that they referenced came to the opposite conclusion.
Hold the thought there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bill was just simply saying that so often you'll see these articles in the paper that, for instance, say, don't be taking vitamin E. Oh, my goodness, you know, this can give you all sorts of complications. I would simply share with our listeners a story that somebody, one of our supporters from the East, told me about her, I think it was her, probably her daughter-in-law, who had ovarian cancer, a much younger woman, and was going to have to go in for chemotherapy. And so she got her a copy of one of the books we carry called Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients that goes into the things that you should do in the way of vitamins and minerals. If you're going to take chemotherapy, you've got to do something else. Your hair is going to fall out. You're going to be violently ill. You're going to feel terrible. And if you're using nutritional supplements along with this, and this is not to say don't take your chemotherapy, but it is saying that there's a great deal that you can do through natural strategies on your own to keep from getting so violently ill. And as the woman was telling me that the woman's hair didn't fall out, the doctor couldn't understand the oncologist. He said, what are you doing? Everybody else's hair falls out. Why does your hair fall out? Why do you feel so good when we're doing these things to you? Of course, the woman would not tell him because, of course, Dr. Blaylock, who wrote the book, said, if you tell your doctor he's going to tell you not to do these things, he's going to scoff at it. Well, I'll tell you, she was a walking testimony, and this woman, who's one of our supporters, was so pleased with what had happened that she sent us a very, very generous gift, simply because we were pointing her in the right direction, and it had helped her daughter-in-law. And these things really do work, and we hear it from so many people, but the doctors can't believe it because it's not in their journals, and there may be a reason it's not in their journals. Do you think that's possible?
Well, certainly what we see is the public being kept in the dark, and of course, it is true. Now you're going to be frightened, and you're going to be in front of a doctor. He's going to tell you, don't take any vitamin pills while you're undergoing cancer treatment. And, of course, it is true that those vitamins conflict with the chemotherapy. No, there's no question they conflict with it. One is toxic and one is non-toxic. It's the antidote against the toxicity. Most people die of the treatment rather than the cancer itself. And, of course, you need protection against this treatment, the side effects. Not that treatment doesn't go after cancer cells, but it's not selective. It just doesn't pick cancer cells. It picks healthy cells, which is why a lot of people die of heart failure, and then the doctor comes out to meet with the family and says, well, I'm pleased to say that we've kept the cancer at bay, but I'm sorry the patient succumbed to a heart attack, which was caused by the treatment. They never connect that for you. So this is what we're trying to prevent. Many of the cancer drugs and so on are cardiotoxic. And so we're trying to prevent the heart from failing. We're trying to prevent not just your hair falling out and so on. So it's more than that. And, of course, you don't realize behind the scenes what's going on. So it's very, yes, of course, if we're just trying to kill cancer cells, but, you know, it's kind of like lighting a flame and burning the whole thing down. We have to keep our heart pumping and remain alive here. I can kill every cancer cell while I kill the organism itself. So the idea is not to be as toxic as possible. You can, for a momentarily, you use chemotherapy or radiation treatment, and in between, you use these antioxidants and so on to counter many of the side effects. And this is true. You can see some studies where vitamin E, it says that cancer cells actually grow a little bit better sometimes when you give vitamin E. Well, they certainly do. What do you think vitamin E is around to? It's protect all cells. It doesn't know tumor cell from other cell, and so therefore that's what it does. Now, what we're learning is there are some nutrients like resveratrol from red wine, some found in green tea, some in olives. Those selectively will kill cancer cells and won't harm the healthy cells. That's even better than modern chemotherapy, which hasn't figured that out in 30 years. So this is where we're headed. We hope to expose more of this. I'm busy writing a book about cancer now. It'll take a while to get it finished. But what people need to understand is there are things you can do today. But much of this information, Dr. Stan, I can remember when the whole issue of smoking came up and tobacco. And, of course, the California had a anti-smoking ad, which we still don't see too often anymore. And that was the one where the executives were before Congress with their being sworn in to tell the truth. And, of course, it came out all along. They knew that they had evidence that the tobacco caused the lung cancer and so on. And, of course, it was only then. It wasn't all these years of us telling people not to smoke. It might lead to cancer. It was when they saw there was a conspiracy to hide the information. Only then did some people throw away their cigarettes. Only then did some people find. It made a tremendous impact that they knew there was a conspiracy to keep this information from them. So somehow the public won't operate just on the information itself. But somehow if they know that there's a conspiracy, they'll act. And, of course, we don't see that ad anymore because the tobacco industry was almost demolished with it. Bill Clinton, as president, used it as a weapon against the tobacco companies because they were funding the opposing party, the Republican Party at the time, and it had nothing to do with public health. He was just trying to destroy his competition. So this is what was done. These ads were used. Millions of dollars was extracted from tobacco companies, and it was all about politics and not about public health. So, of course, the public never appraised of the behind-the-scenes political war there. And, of course, the whole issue was tobacco executives had been hiding all of these papers that actually some of them funded by the government, and we could never get our hands on them, if you can imagine this. So it's terrible what's going on. The American public is being treated like a bunch of little sheep being herded around, and it doesn't matter whether it's a life and death issue or not. It's more than just your money. It's more than just your taxes, your guns, and your freedom. It's your very life. And they don't mind if they take it if they can make a dollar on it. And so, as tragic as that may sound, we need to be far more skeptical. I know we're in no position to do battle when we've got cancer, and yet we've got to somehow help people get out of that vulnerable situation. Sooner or later, we're going to be treating cancer at home more effectively than we can at any of the cancer hospitals in the United States. And by the way, someday, go visit Sloan Kettering Institute, the Sloan Kettering Memorial, which is the nation's cancer center. And if you stand outside on the steps there, you'll see the workers come out for their tobacco breaks. It'll give you great confidence in our country's anti-cancer program.
I think people really need to understand that, you know, smoking not only produces cancer of the lung, it produces cancer of the pancreas and the bladder, and a cancer of the certainly of the lips and of the throat, and all of these are all directly related to cancer. They've known that. It affects the lungs, it affects the heart. I mean, it has a devastating effect on the body. And they knew that, and yet they allowed this to continue to be sold here. And it really wasn't the government at all that did away with tobacco. In fact, the government put a little note on the tobacco package, and it said, "This may be hazardous to your health. Surgeon General's warning." Why was that important? Why then, of course, when people brought lawsuits against the tobacco companies, they could say, look, it was right there. I mean, on that package you bought it, you mean you didn't know it was hazardous to your health? And it was put there to protect the tobacco companies, not to get discouraged people from smoking. And then, of course, it was the lawyers that really brought the pressure to bear that really, of course, has devastated the tobacco industry. But they're still doing pretty well. And now we've allowed them, of course, to go throughout the world, selling tobacco cigarettes throughout the world to kill off large numbers of people. This is one of the largest killers in America today. The reason, of course, we have so much cancer of the lung in women, when I went to medical school, you never saw cancer of the lung in women. Today, it's the second most common cancer among women, specifically because of those slogans that they used back in the 40s and 50s. Why not have a smoke rather than a sweet? And they hired a guy named Edward Bernay to use the movies and the advertisements to get women to smoke, and they did. And so literally millions of women have died here. And now that we're cutting it off, or trying to cut it off in America, why, of course, they're allowing our tobacco companies to go throughout the world selling this to kill hundreds of millions of people in other countries. Why would our government allow that to happen? Unless maybe there was another agenda. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, of course, when it comes to smoking, oddly enough, about 70% of smokers never get cancer. And, of course, it's slow in its onset. Of course, it's terrible when you get the diagnosis, but one of the things that's kind of being kept from public view is that people smoke in other countries, especially Japan, and do not seem to get the anywhere near the same rate of lung cancer. And there is grave concern that the FDA has allowed certain additives and preservatives and certain kind of taste enhancers to be put into the tobacco, which is the real enemy, and of course the real toxins that are there. And the FDA has not demanded that the tobacco companies put on their label everything that's in that tobacco product. And so in Japan and so on, they don't use the same kind of tobacco additives and so on. And so we've actually had things added to the tobacco to make it habitual, to make it difficult to stimulate nerves in the brain so that we become dependent and so on. And those things are added to the tobacco, and we have no idea. Now, it's not even on the label now. Remember, the Pure Food and Drug Act requires everything to have a label with everything on it, and, of course, even in trace amounts, and yet they don't demand this even today. So you wonder if this FDA is on your side or not, especially when we see that there are, these kind of things going on in other countries don't have anywhere near the same kind of lung cancer with the smoking. So this is the kind of thing that the public needs to become cognizant of, that the FDA for a long, long time now has been running a campaign to keep things out of public view. This isn't new. I'm certainly thankful for the Vioxx scandal. Certainly not for the thousands who died, but only that it has become visible for the public for the first time. Every time we point something out, of course, it's so difficult to go and prove it, because they go into a denial mode and they have their various ways of substantiating why they did things. But this is all, of course, a sad day. The same people are in charge in the FDA that were there when the Vioxx scandal broke, and of course it's tragic what's still going on, and they haven't stopped any of this, and thousands of people die. How many thousands? Well, aspirin and ibuprofen still kill at least 16,000 people a year due to bleeding gastric ulcers, and we do nothing to stop it. You might put something on the label. All that means is it's now blamed on you, the patient, not the drug company that sold it. These kinds of drugs should have never been approved. They never would be reapproved. You imagine something that kills 16,000 people a year? It doesn't matter whether it's a baby aspirin, or it doesn't matter whether it's coated or whatever. And, of course, one of the greatest causes of adult onset asthma is an aspirin tablet. It's acid, acetylsalicylic acid. A lot of people have a little tortuous throat and esophagus, and the aspirin tablet never makes it into your tummy. It just gets caught in the throat, eats its way through your esophagus, causes erosion, and in some cases it goes down into your stomach, and that acetylsalicylic acid, because there's air and gas in your stomach, gets blown back up and into your lung, and you end up with adult onset asthma. And by the way, it's irreversible once it happens, so because it causes fibrosis or scarring in your lung. So this is just from a simple aspirin tablet. And, of course, we've just let this go on and let this go on and let this go on. The FDA is fully aware that adult onset asthma, the major cause, is taking an aspirin tablet every day. And so, you know, and we see the tremendous increase in adult onset asthma and all this, and never saw it before, never saw it with our grandparents and so on, and now it's here today. And we act as if we don't know what's causing it. And there's those aspirin tablets, which is, of course, you see on television portrayed as something going to keep you from dying of a heart attack, which we know it doesn't do unless you're taking it at the moment you have a heart attack. Otherwise, it doesn't seem to be very effective. And, of course, the idea is to keep the blood clots from occurring in the four coronary arteries at the time. You need it at the time you're having chest pain. Otherwise, it doesn't seem to really work very well. Of course, we know that vitamin C is a thing. It keeps the artery wall strong, so you won't have them collapse and even cause the blood clots in the first place. So this is kind of what's happening, and you're, of course, the guinea pigs, the pawns in the game. And, of course, even Jesus knew that the people were like sheep in a flock. And if they were shepherded by the wrong shepherd, of course, they'd go in the wrong direction. We can't know everything about medicine. It's too complicated. That's why others are here to translate it for you. We're trying to give you this message. I know for many of you, you go, well, what about my vitamin pill? Or what about my aspirin pill? Or what about my ibuprofen? Well, of course, we're trying to tell you all these things so that you know. Even vitamin C, which I think is very safe. But for some people, it is an acid, ascorbic acid, and it bothers them because they have this tortuous throat. And for them, they might do better with the buffered form of vitamin C, which is alkaline, attached to an alkaline mineral like calcium or magnesium and so on. So if vitamin C could do this, well, certainly an aspirin tablet could do it. We're not paying attention. We're not helping the folks get through these problems so that they won't get, of course, in many cases, a mortal outcome. If you have a bleeding gastric ulcer and you're an older adult, you may not survive that. It's not easy to treat. You can't just go in there and patch it up very easily. So it becomes a real difficult thing to do without killing the patient or causing more treatment than you really needed. So it's a real a dilemma. But we're not being told. This is great for business, great for the business of medicine, but it's just not great for the patients. And we're doing everything we can to make sure that doctors are employed. So Certainly that's true in the area of prostate cancer, where we're doing a needless, worthless PSA test, and then biopsies that only cause inflammation in the prostate gland and could cause cancer.
About, Bill, we're just about out of time. Let's get your telephone number and your website out for our listeners.
For folks, knowledgeofhealth.com, knowledgeofhealth.com, that's the place you can go get the reports for free about your health.
All right, fine. knowledgeofhealth.com, go there. And Bill's got some other websites, but this will sort of link with all the others. Get his information. You'll find it very, very valid. He's got a lot of material there. He's got books. He's got other information that you need to know. You're going to have to learn about your health. You are responsible for yourself. You're responsible for your family. And you're responsible for helping us educate the medical profession about a lot of things good doctors just plain don't know, because PubMed and the other people just don't want them to know. Well, Bill, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Well, certainly, I think when the public hears that information has been kept from their view and their own doctors, they can full well understand why their doctors give them the answers, sometimes incomplete, sometimes frustrated, about vitamins, minerals, or any of the other natural remedies. They can see maybe why all this happens. I know for many of us, we're just confused. It's well over our head. We're certainly not medically literate. And left in a dilemma, I'm going to trust my doctor. And, of course, we don't want to trust our doctor to a fault. And as I've said so many times before, modern medicine has trouble. There's such a thing as, of course, the evidence-based medicine, where they find out if there's really any evidence to prove any of the treatments modern medicine does. There are only three treatments that they can find that have been found to be scientifically valid, and those are treating broken bones, fixing teeth, and replacing cloudy cataracts with a lens implant. The rest of them all don't work. Whether it's treatment for blood pressure, glaucoma, you name it, they do not have evidence that any of the cancer treatments, there is no evidence. What we're doing now is we're treating people with the disproven, because we say that vitamins and minerals and so on are unproven. Well, they won't do the research to prove it. Where they have done the research, they're hiding it. And so what we get is the continued disproven treatments that are toxic. This sounds like backwards logic, but it's exactly what modern medicine is doing today. If you go to my website, knowledgeofhealth.com, you can download a free book, The Collapse of Conventional Medicine. Read the whole story there. It's all documented for your free reading.
All right, and of course, we're waiting with bated breath for your book to come out. When will that be done?
It's going to be a little while now, because we've certainly gotten our hands deep in this whole issue of cancer. But hopefully sometime this spring we're going to have a book on cancer to explain all this, what people can do to get out of this terrible dilemma of cancer once it comes. And, of course, the baby boomers are entering the cancer era of their life, so it'll be a timely publication.
All right, fine. Well, Bill, I really appreciate so very much your being with us again. The website is knowledgeofhealth.com. That's knowledgeofhealth.com. Go there, get the information, and, of course, you are responsible for your health. Bill Sardi, thank you so very much for being with us.
Good afternoon.
Bye-bye. God bless. All right, that was Bill, and I certainly hope you enjoyed hearing Bill. Certainly he's one of our favorite guests on health and health issues. And if you look up his sources of reference, they are valid. Certainly he sent me ahead of time the article on arginine and the conscious effort to discourage you from using something that can be helpful. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and let me suggest, if you're really concerned about your health, you need to get Russell Blaylock's excellent book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. That's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. I know my wife has a copy of it, and she refers to it frequently. For instance, you probably don't know that so many of the soy products that you're getting now, especially the genetically engineered soy, and so much of it is genetically engineered, has disastrous effects in animals, and even in the human studies, it shows marked change in the physiology of people who eat that, and so many of our vegetarians are into soy and soy products. Did you know that they're poisoning us as far as fluoride? Did you know that they're poisoning us with NutraSweet? The scientific studies are all there. And yet if you go to the CDC or the FDA, they'll tell you, all the studies are on the other side, and they're simply lying. Did you know that they're poisoning people with mercury? Oh, we're so worried about people eating fish because it has mercury in it, but roll up your sleeve and we're going to give you a toxic dose of mercury to your six-month-old child. Why we're going to give it to pregnant women in the first trimester, knowing full well the disastrous effects it will have on the unborn child, and why would anybody want to do something like that? Well, ladies and gentlemen, there are evil people in the world. First of all, the books, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills, that's the story of NutraSweet, they're all by Dr. Blaylock, and Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients, those three books that Russell has. We have a four-tape set with him, Life-Saving Secrets. We have a four-tape set on the statin drugs. We have a four-tape set on a number of items. We even have a health special, which has a book on magnesium, a book on the statin drugs. And of course, it has a four-tape set on statins. If you've been gotten onto statins, because, of course, if you don't take them, you're going to die. We're all going to die, whether you take them or not. But you need to read the scientific studies. And the tragedy is, most people will never read the package inserts. If you'd like the package insert on Crestor, and this is the most dramatic of the statin drugs. It will really get your cholesterol down better than anything else. But what does it do to prevent cardiac morbidity and cardiac mortality? Well, if you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-544-8927, and as for the insert for Crestor, we'll be glad to send you a page out of the physician's desk reference, and I've outlined it for you because you get lost, rated. It says, has no effect on cardiac morbidity or mortality. That means it doesn't have any effect on cardiac disease or cardiac death. Well, if it doesn't, why are you spending all that money for it? And why are you taking it and lowering your cholesterol to dangerous levels? Well, you're doing it because your cholesterol will go down. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, it does go down. But what does it do? You need to get Shane Ellison's book on the statin drugs. And of course, you need to get our four-tape set on the statin drugs. You need to understand what's going on. And then to put it at the next step of understanding, you need to get my video and or VD, Planned Population Reduction. It's about 2.5 hours of me talking, but I will tell you that you'll be fascinated by it, not because it's me doing the talking, but because of the information you're going to hear there and the documentation. And we have documentation on everything we say, and yet you're not hearing this through the regular channels. That's Planned Population Reduction. And then we have a four-tape set on population control. We have a video on population control. We have a monograph called The Population Control Agenda. You can find it at our website at radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. Go there. Listen to our programs, live programs, 3 hours a day. You link to the other two networks we're on, and that would be the American Freedom Network, the Genesis Network. We're also on rbnlive.com. They archive our evening programs as do we at Radio Liberty. And then we ask you to tell us about our programs. And we ask you, of course, to encourage them to listen. Copy our newsletters. Read them. Understand what's going on. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Because on the front lines of this battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization, may the Lord be with you.